Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For good health, eat more seafood, we were told. And the next thing you know, it seems, seafood stocks were in trouble. Don't eat this fish, don't eat that one. But do eat fish and enjoy. It's confusing. Chef Barton Seaver has a new cookbook out for sustainable, delicious seafood. We're going to get some guidance on the sustainable part and the delicious part. This hour on Point from the Deep Blue Sea and its edges, cooking sustainable seafood with Chef Barton Seaver. You can join the conversation, what's your question, on eco-friendly seafood, on cooking up some tilapia, some barramundi, some amberjack, some oysters. What's your question on what's sustainable or not on our for our seafood chef? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In this hour, we'll be testing some sustainable dishes with our old friend J.J. Gonson, giving you tips on how to make them. Joining me now in the studio is Barton Seaver, chef and conservationist. He's the former executive chef at Hook, a sustainable seafood restaurant in Washington, D.C. He's a National Geographic Fellow, and we'll talk about that, named Chef of the Year by Esquire magazine. His new cookbook is For Cod and Country, Simple, Delicious, Sustainable Cooking. Barton Seaver, welcome to the show. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I love the show.
So
pleased to be here.
Here's your thing. Delicious is the new environmentalism. Delicious is the new environmentalism. But delicious, I mean, I always thought delicious was also like a nice, nice fillet of red snapper. And it's on your no-go list. So what do
well,
I do?
I think we'll probably get into that a little bit. But sustainability when it comes to seafood is such an enormously complex issue. And we only ever have a snapshot of what's really going on at any given time. And what I really work towards is building a larger understanding of the exceptionally complex communities, ecologies, and human systems that really all come into play when we talk about sustainable foods and really the joy and the expectations that we have of the very human ritual of dinner.
We'll talk about those interactions. We'll talk about the joy, I very much hope, and the expectations there. But when you're, you know, standing at the fish market, if you're lucky enough to have one in your neighborhood, or even at the frozen fish counter, and we'll talk about that, you're not so down on frozen fish. Mm-hmm. And if I've got your big, lovely cookbook in my back pocket and look down at this list of things not to go for, and it's a long one. You've got Atlantic cod, bluefin tuna, Chilean sea bass. All these are no-goes. Flounder, grouper, monkfish, octopus, orange roughy, shark, skate, and the aforementioned snapper, all kind of off the list. Now, why? Are these all on your list because they are endangered species, because they've been fished to some dangerous point? Why are they on your list?
Well, that's exactly the truth. Over the past five decades, when we've really ramped up fishing technology through more powerful engines, seeking more offshore fisheries, frankly, we've eaten too many of the fish in the sea. And they haven't disappeared. You know, we've eaten them. This is our issue. This is not an ecological issue. It's a human behavior issue. Mm-hmm. Many of the species that are on there, such as orange roughy, is an exceptionally long-lived species that 30 years ago no one had ever heard of. In fact, I believe it's called slimehead is the true name for it.
Yummy, I'll have a slime. No, I won't, because your list says no matter what you call it, don't eat it.
Right. Well, these are fish that don't reach sexual maturity until they're about 30 years old.
And how long do they live if they're not?
About 140 years or so.
So when you eat one, you're eating a chunk of history.
You're eating a chunk of your grandparents' history.
Yes.
And it's these fisheries, these stocks are so incredibly long-lived. They're incredibly complex, and so they're not very resilient to fishing pressure. However, there are species such as Atlantic cod, which is on my list of species to avoid. But honestly, I truly believe that fishermen deserve as much protection as do fish.
Oh, whoa. How do you do that? I mean, it's fishermen who brought all this lovely fish in that we ate until you had to have a list like this.
Absolutely.
I mean, God love them, but isn't that been part of the problem? They have an economic incentive to go for fish no matter what, unless they're really thinking in a holistic way.
Well, and some of the damage that has been wrought to fishing communities is now affecting whole generations. And fishing communities are beginning to take notice of this and realize that their true incentive is to continue on their practices well into the future so that their grandchildren can continue to participate in a fishery. And As I said before, sustainable seafood is very complex. I'd actually like to amend that.
Yeah.
Sustainable seafood, green list species, for which it is a good idea to eat them, such as oysters, mussels, clams, barramundi, tilapia, catfish. That is a very simple idea. There are not many environmental concerns associated with it. It's good, clean, lean protein with high omega-3s. Great idea. Eat more. Unsustainable seafood is wickedly complex. And the purpose of this dialogue is not about the green list, but rather changing the fate of the species that are currently depleted. And I truly believe the best way to do that is to incentivize poorly acting fisheries through our consumer dollars. Find the best players within an industry. And there's great examples of that here in New England. Just off Cape Cod, Eric Hess, Paul Parker, and a number of very visionary fishermen are running a wonderful organization, Cape Cod Commercial Hook Fishermen's Association.
If you grew up in the time of ocean plenty, and I mean forever, that was the image of the seas, right? They were so vast, and the abundance there was so great, we could never touch it, but we have. But if you grew up when that wasn't the case, and everything was available, everything was in the fish market, you could have it all. And now you run into this era where we're told eat more fish, but no, 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 and no on these species. Can it still be a satisfying experience for the palate that was built exactly around, in many cases, the list that you're putting out here is off limits? Is it still delicious?
Well, you know, many of the species that are on that list, orange roughy, Chilean sea bass, bluefin tuna, historically, literally up to about three decades ago, were considered trash fish, monk fish, skate, were never considered fine eating fish.
Mm-hmm.
White tablecloth chefs and the consumer general, as gastronomy has grown in America, have made many of these species more preferred. And so, historically, we ate herring, we ate salmon, we ate cod, mussels, clams, oysters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what those are? Those are the fish that swim towards us.
But what do you mean by that?
Well, the herring, the shad, they swim straight upstream.
Yes,
You know, right. The oysters, the mussels.
Right. Into the net.
All you have to do is wait for low tide.
Yeah.
Easy meal.
Are.
And
yeah.
You don't even have to cook them.
So in a way, the great era of fillets of these others was outside the trend of history, you're saying.
In many ways, yes. You know, we've advanced our technology and furthered our ability to fish offshore. Certainly high-tech refrigeration and new technology in icing and freezing have led to that. But really, getting back to the idea that the purpose of the sustainability dialogue is to restore. And sometimes the best way to do that is to support the best players within a bad industry.
Your approach to this begins with something very, very simple, and that is simply when you're eating seafood, eat less, particularly if it's anywhere near your list here. You're saying just cut the portion down. Have it, but you don't have to eat 16 ounces of it, sir.
Absolutely. They're the first least moral, least ethical, and least kind of knowledgeable thing that we can do, and the best for ourselves, too. If you want to talk about a humanly sustaining meal, we're talking about vegetables, folks. I mean, I'm sorry to bear the news to you that your mother was right all those years ago that eat your vegetables.
But
you know, we're never going to save the oceans by eating sustainable seafood alone. It's got to come from quinoa and sweet potatoes.
And your seafood cookbook has got just about as much vegetable in it as it does seafood.
You know, we have such a protein-centric society. You know, picture in your mind a white tablecloth restaurant menu. You know, somewhere where you're paying $25 an entree.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have there? You have 14-point font bold. Atlantic salmon fillet, blah, 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 all the accompaniments in regular font, you know, 8-point, 10-point, down there on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you have the price, $25, 14-point font bold. When you say to the waiter or the waitress, I'll have the Atlantic salmon tonight, please, we only participate in the dialogue through the protein. But in fact, what makes cooking fun, and almost every white tablecloth chef will tell you this, is the ingredients. It's what we associate with the dish. It's the texture of the pecan quinoa pilaf, lightly sautéed till it's crunchy and brilliantly hued and aromatic. It's the sweet potatoes tossed and roasted with a little bit of cilantro almond pesto and the whole thing with a few leaves of perfectly picked cilantro, ripe and aromatic, blooming off the plate.
Sing it, baby. Yeah, go.
Crisp raw shallots dressed with just a little bit of lemon juice and extra virgin olive oil. Woo! You know, notice that I didn't even mention what's on the plate yet in terms of the protein.
Yes, yeah.
And
I've already got you. Still in the sea. Right.
Yeah.
Now, you've definitely got me. So you're a serious chef, Culinary Institute of America and all the rest. You don't feel constrained or diminished by staying off some of these seafood species.
No, absolutely not. In fact, in one of my restaurants, we served about 78 different species of seafood in a single year. And that's including an oyster is an oyster.
Is not that a good thing or a bad thing?
It was because I...
Well, was it good or bad? I don't know. 78 species. Does that mean you were chowing too much seafood or you were using more of the range?
I certainly sometimes felt as though I were single-handedly emptying the oceans. Yeah. But part of the problem is that in America, we only consume about 10 species of seafood. Most of us even consume less than that. Crab, tuna fish, salmon, catfish, maybe scallops, clams. You know, the list is very, very small. But there's over 450 commercially available federally managed species in the United States alone. And the problem is we've drilled down with our burden into the oceans in such a very specific way. And yes, there are major fisheries such as cod, such as Alaskan salmon, that can provide so many pounds. But there's a reason why they call it fishing and not catching. You put a line in the water in a very sustainable, time-honored, age-old method of throwing a line in the water, saying, here, fishy, fishy. You don't know what's coming up. You know, if you're down in Florida, it's a barracuda, it's a wahoo, it's a mahi, it's a blackfin tuna, it's a yellowfin tuna.
But we don't just throw a line in the water anymore. Do you worry that when you point out all these other species, and we've got 6 billion people, you're just turning those trawlers toward wiping out everything else as well?
Absolutely. And that is an effect of demanding to have whatever we want available to us at all times. And part of what I've done in the book is organized it seasonally. And any fisherman will tell you this. And I think in New England, you're a little more attuned to...
Because every species has its best species, fullest flavor.
You know when the mackerel come offshore. You see the shad in the river. You know the bluefish are there because everybody's whispering about it in the cafes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about cooking sustainable seafood with chef conservationist Barton Seaver. He's out to save the fish and save dinner. His new cookbook is For Cod and Country, Simple, Delicious, and Sustainable Cooking. You can see a gallery of photos of really terrific dishes at our website, onpointradio.org. Barton Seaver is with me in the studio, as is J.J. Gonson, a locavore chef, founder of Cuisine and Locale Personal Chef Service, and a regular friend of this show with her wonderful cooking. You've been out in the kitchen with Barton.
Yeah.
This is beautiful. Thank you so much for bringing it in.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's great to see you guys.
You've been good enough to crack open this big, beautiful book and cook a few dishes. What's on the table in front of us, J.J.?
I'm going to get the names wrong. There's an anchovy.
Barton, help us here.
Yeah, why don't you tell us, because you know the names.
The first thing, as we were talking about, the best way to save the oceans is actually to eat more vegetables. So the dish in front of us here first is a nice spring dish that I love to prepare. So easy. It's a thinly sliced shaved fennel with thinly julienned red pepper, orange segments all dressed with
a salad.
Anchovy vinaigrette and a little bit of fresh nutmeg grated over the top.
So it's in the seafood cookbook, but the seafood is limited all the way down to the anchovy vinaigrette.
It's cool. Anchovies are really fantastic because you eat the bones. They're so small, and you actually get calcium from them, and that's really important, especially at a time when people are sort of demonizing dairy a little bit, and we all know that we need more calcium. So there's sort of this win-win with the anchovy. And sardines, those very, very small fish where you eat the bones.
But though, I mean, you say go for smaller portions, and just having it in a vinaigrette, that's about as small a portion as you can get.
Right, but you're still getting a huge quantity of the omega-3s, the heart-healthy fatty acids that are good for cardioprotective benefits as well as for neurological developmental benefits in children, for nursing mothers and young mothers.
Absolutely. So everybody wants that omega-3, but then you hesitate in the shopping aisle because I don't want to kill all the fish, but I want the omega-3. Here's a way to do it. We're going to have some clams as well. We're going to have some mackerel as well. Before we get our mouths into this stuff, Barton, tell us, how does this, here you are at the same time, you're with the National Geographic Society, a fellow there. What's a chef, who's writing, putting together recipes for a beautiful cook like you and JJ have got for us here, doing with National Geographic? How's that figure in?
It takes a little bit of explaining, so if you'll forgive me here, but food is the confluence of every scientific enterprise and of every scientific discipline. It is how we relate to our natural world.
That is a chef's eye view of the world, but we'll take it. We'll run with it.
Well, and for the purpose of conservation, think about this. What we often think of as National Geographic, these brave men and women, the photographers, sent out into the world on a mission to create a relationship with something that you and I will most likely never see.
The Himalayas.
Such
from
as
the top.
The Himalayas or the bottom of the ocean. Yeah. Or
and they're sent out to take a snapshot, a souvenir of that relationship, bring it back to us so that we can, it literally usually changes our entire perception of an entire continent or an entire subject. You know, how many of us, of listeners, have been 5,000 feet under the Southern Oceans? How many of us have been to the spice plantations of Madagascar or personally banked through the glacial hills of Alaska in a little biplane in search of salmon and the grizzly?
I have. The last, anyway, but even so, you're right. But they take us there. They make it real. And when they make the ocean real, what does that mean to you as a chef?
Well, as a chef, you know, as I said, who has really been under the water? Sure, there's the Sylvia Earles, the Enrique Salas, the Jacques Cousteau's. But how many of the listeners here have eaten Chilean sea bass or had some black pepper sprinkled onto a salmon steak?
Probably a lot more than have been down there.
Absolutely. And just as National Geographic sends an expert eye in witness to the drama of our world, so too do we see this. But we see it through our plates. We explore the world through our forks.
I mean, but the fish market where JJ goes, where you go, it gives a, I guess it's not really an accurate representation because they will go scavenging for that fish no matter where.
I mean,
even when there's a lot of destruction, the market, all that fish laid out on the ice can look darn good.
Well,
or not laid out. That we actually had an incredibly difficult time finding, of all things, Boston mackerel for this meal. You would think it would have been everywhere. People pull it out of the water all day long. They use it
for
bait.
But it just wasn't in the market.
Nobody wants it. There's no demand. It's a sustainable fish. It's very high in fatty acids. It's an incredibly rich fish. And our palates have been trained away from it. That doesn't mean that people wouldn't like it.
We're going to change that. It looks like beautiful lobster rolls here almost. And we'll come to the mackerel, but hard to find. But not always as
not
hard to find.
Not after the show.
After the show. And not as
yes,
hard to find,
go
Barton, as it may actually be in the sea, because the fishermen go out and find it for us even when it's diminishing.
Absolutely.
Well, yes.
Well, and that's really, I think, the overarching narrative of sustainability is really a story about opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunity we have to restore our relationship with the oceans, to restore our relationship with our communities and the fishermen who so bravely and boldly risk their lives to feed us. Mm-hmm. And honestly, to restore our relationship with our families, with each other, through the act and the kindness that is dinner. And this is ultimately what we need to do. We seek to feed a very complicated hunger through food. We seek to nourish with much more than just calories.
Mm-hmm.
We need joy because food is delicious. We need health because food is sustaining to us corporally. We need community because we rely on an interdependent and intricate framework of social structures to actually participate
and
in the world around us.
We need to support
and financial,
our
absolutely.
Fishermen. Because
Well, I'm feeling the joy, certainly, smelling all this, and we're bravely and boldly resisting digging in quite yet because we've got callers. I want to give them their place at the table. Richard, in New York City, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Richard.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm questioning evidence that the concept of sustainable fishing is really a misnomer. That you're just moving into taking fish out of the ocean, that the larger fish, you say, all right, we won't fish tuna, but the fish that you're taking out are what the tuna fish off of. So the concept of sustainability is really not true and viable. Like to comment on that, please.
So, and we will, Richard. What do you take from that, though? Before I give it to Barton Siever, does that mean you don't want to eat seafood at all? You don't do it, or what?
Well, there are many scientists. I was at a lecture at the in New York City, and I forgot one of the scientists' name. And she says, yes, we're basically killing the oceans, and we're basically killing the fish population because of our overpopulation.
Let us pick it up right there, Richard. Barton Siever, what about it? Sustainability itself a misnomer. Richard's afraid, you know, to even get in there. You start eating the small stuff, too, and it's all gone.
Well, Richard, I thank you very much for your question. It is a fantastic question and one that begs debate. And I believe that the preeminent scientist that you're probably speaking about is Dr. Sylvia Earle, who's probably the grand dame of oceans.
I mean, she's joined us right here on these microphones and said, you know, don't eat those fish oil. oil capsules mm-hmm. in the supermarket because they're sucking up everything in the sea to make them.
Yeah, and she really is the giant on whose shoulders we all stand.
So
in
what
terms
about
of
it?
Ocean.
Then?
And I actually engaged in a debate with her just a few days ago about mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. Really, I think what we're reacting to is this idea of sustainable. And I think we really need to move the dialogue away from sustaining, mm-hmm. meaning maintaining the status quo,
exactly.
to really the idea of restoration. Mm-hmm. And I really see eating fish as a way to promote and incentivize fishermen and communities to be doing the right thing, to participate.
Explain that, because we've eaten our way to the situation we're in now.
Right. And we're not going to stop fishing. I mean, just as natural, as so we call natural ecosystems are complex. Mm-hmm. And Richard, you're right. You can't just take out the tuna and not take out the menhaden or the sardines, the mackerel, the anchovies that they feed on without messing up that balance. However, the human ecosystem, which I would say is just as natural as what we call the natural world, is just as delicate and intricate and balanced. And we can't just remove fishing from our cultural ecosystem. And so the opportunity.
That's a nice philosophy, but what about just at the grubbiest level? If all those humans eat fish, do we wipe them out? This is what Richard seems to be saying. You know, it's just not sustainable. There's too many of us. We're too successful as a species.
Well, at the current rates, yes, but we also need to look at it. Sustainability is too often seen as a product-centric dialogue, but we also need to maintain a behavior-centric dialogue. Mm-hmm. If I can give a quick example of this, the Peruvian anchoveta. It's the world's largest single-species fishery. About 40 million metric tons are taken out of the water every year.
That is an area of anchovy fishing off the coast of Peru, I guess.
In this incredibly rich coastal upwelling there. And 97% of the anchovies that are caught end up in the paint that's on the studio walls, in the adhesive on the carpet. It ends up as milled as feed for chickens and for pigs.
We've got anchovies on our wall?
Absolutely. You got it in the lipstick that, Tom, you're not wearing.
No.
The moisturizers that we put on our bodies.
Okay. So
what
do you
need
take
to look at?
Yeah.
Well, we're about to dig into a fennel anchovy salad here, and I'll tell you that 97% of those fish should be going to us. We need to use these products in a more sustainable, in a better way, to gain more value from them, instead of pushing them into an industrial complex by feeding pigs. And honestly, I've never seen a pig go fishing, but I've certainly eaten my fair share of anchovies and would love to see more.
Let us partake in exactly the complexity you describe. As Richard warns that it may all go away, you've got these anchovies in paint and lipstick, and right in front of us, orange and fennel salad with anchovy vinaigrette. That's about as light a touch, JJ, as you could have. Putting this together, what do you think, JJ?
I'm going to dig in here.
It's very colorful. It's very beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's so beautiful, and I'm excited because I got to use my orange supreming skills, which is something I don't get to pull out very often
really
as a locavore.
I'd
love to. Supreming an orange is when you remove the pith and the all of the fibrous bits from the orange segments, and you leave only the sweet flesh of the orange behind. And I never do it because I'm a locavore.
You're very patient.
So I was so happy. I was like, oh, I get to supreme an orange.
It's just the lightest touch of anchovy. This is a long way from
delicious.
That anchovy in the middle of your Caesar salad
blanched
or pizza.
Blanched garlic, Barton.
Yeah.
Blanched. Cool.
Well,
I did it. Just
you.
The way you told me.
What
to three
do?
Boils.
What does that
the last
do to
one
garlic
salt.
To blanch it?
It's so mild.
Everybody knows
so
that garlic
mild.
Has a well-deserved, ugly side.
Oh, yeah.
And,
but not here.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I love about garlic is the sweet, soft, nutty, floral aromas of it. And if you blanch it, literally put it into cold water. There's the peeled garlic cloves. Bring it up to a boil.
Yeah.
And as soon as it comes to a boil, pour the water off and start again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You get all the flavor and the pungency and the nutty
the
aroma and that sex appeal of garlic without...
A little less oil. A little less of the bite.
Yeah, without the bite, and you can still play kissy games later. And it all works out.
It's a win-win.
It plays nice kissy games with anchovy here.
Because anchovy is such a dominant flavor, you get this wonderful soft garlic instead of the garlic dominating it. Mm-hmm. And you have all these really gentle flavors here, the sweetness of the bell pepper, the sweetness of the fennel, the sweetness of the orange, and then that wonderful, very mild garlic. And it would have just tromped it if it had been much stronger.
It is not exactly a seafood steak, but it's an anchovy vinaigrette,
it's
and
delicious.
It gets us right into the ocean in a very light and, as you say, perfect for springtime way. Let me get a call from Woodford, Vermont. Chuck is calling. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I cook at the farmer's market here in Bennington, next to Woodford.
Great.
And part of my gigs, I do, I work on an Alaskan fishing trawler that sails out of Bristol Bay for Alaskan sockeye and occasionally king salmon.
Right.
And it seems to me that the Alaskan Fish and Game Department does a good time of keeping the fish stock sustainable. I'd like to know how you feel about that.
Let's talk about salmon.
Alaskan salmon is sustainable.
That's a great question, Chuck, and I'm so glad you went right to it. Barton, what about Alaskan salmon and then salmon more broadly? You've got some kinds of salmon who are on your no-go list and others that are not. But start with Alaskan.
Well, Alaska really represents probably the world's best example of a fishery done right. Almost across the board, everything that comes from Alaska, from the incredibly rich, luxuriant sable fish or black cod to the Pacific cod, Alaskan halibut, all five species of salmon are incredibly abundant and well managed. And they're also the reason why is they've managed to really intricately frame the needs of the people with the ability of the resource to provide.
And the sockeye, the wild salmon, Chuck's up there on the fishing boat, cooking that up, but presumably for the fishermen. Should he feel fine about that?
Absolutely. Sockeye salmon is one of my favorites. It's got a really rich, gamey texture to it, a little bit lower in fat than, say, the Alaskan king salmon. And the season in Bristol Bay is actually open for about two more weeks or so. And it really represents, again, a window into the seasonality of seafood.
But what about the rest of the salmon universe? We know there's all kinds of farmed salmon out there. Now, you go to the store, you can see all kinds of salmon of different hues and colors and cuts and you name it, but it may not be immediately clear what to the average shopper what's farmed and what's not and what's sustainable and what's not. Take us out there.
Well, California is a great example of salmon fisheries really in collapse. Over the past 3 years, there has not been a commercial salmon fishery in California. Some of that is due to overfishing. Some of that is due to pollution. Some of it is due to climate change. Some of it is due to land or water usage upstream. Salmon are an anadromous species. They swim upstream to spawn, as we know, the great migration of the salmon.
Yeah.
But if there's not enough water there, or if the water level is too low in the streams that they're used to swimming in, the temperature is too high, and so they can't reproduce naturally or effectively.
I'm in the store. I'm looking at the salmon shelf. What do I reach for, and what do I not?
Well, and then the other one is the Atlantic salmon. Anytime you see Atlantic salmon, it is farmed. They are commercially extinct in terms of any wild fishery being open for them.
Does farmed salmon make your cut?
Farmed salmon can make my cut. Here's the thing, is that it is a massive industry. It is a good product that can be made very well. And there is new technology coming along to make what is inherently kind of an unsustainable fish to farm due to its high carnivorous rate
of feed. It needs a lot of other seafood anchovies, right.
But there are some farms that are doing a better job, that are creating closed containment systems that are low energy input, low feed input.
Can I tell by something on the packaging whether what I'm picking up in the store is in that category or not?
Unfortunately not. The best thing that tool that consumers have, the Monterey Bay Aquarium as well as my partners, the Blue Ocean Institute, both provide wonderful seafood guides in the Seafood Watch and Fish Phone application.
I was about to ask if you knew about Fish Phone. I love this. There's a four-digit number that you can text, and you write fish, and then you write the kind of fish. You can be standing in the market. I can get the number. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I can look
at it. And they're going to know what you're looking at somehow?
Is that right?
No, but they can provide a snapshot of what the industry in general is. So
and
if
they
you type
give
in
you,
catfish.
Right, you type fish, catfish, and then it'll come up red, yellow, green, the same coding system that we're all used to seeing from Monterey Bay Aquarium. And it's an up-to-date, and they'll say the different kinds. So you can look, you can see king salmon or sockeye and make a more educated decision, but you still might be getting some, you don't really know.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about cooking sustainable seafood with chef, conservationist Barton Siever. He's out to save the fish and to save dinner. His big, new, beautiful cookbook is For Cod and Country, Simple, Delicious, Sustainable Cooking. J.J. Gonson is with us as well, founder of Cuisine en Locale, personal chef service. She's come in with some beautiful dishes, recipes right off of Barton's pages and onto our plates. And we've got more to come there, clams and mackerel in quite wonderful displays. Let's get a call, if we may, J.J. Barton from Josh in Beaufort, South Carolina. Josh, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? I love your show. I just, Chef, my question is, I'm a chef restaurant owner down here in the low country of South Carolina.
Great, love it.
And for the longest time, our grouper has been closed off to fishermen, and Department of Natural Resources has opened that fishery, and I know that's a no-no fish to be selling, but I want to support our fishermen down here, and I love the fish. Is that okay to be selling?
Well, thanks for your question, and this very aptly describes some of the difficulties in understanding sustainability as it's currently prescribed by the science.
Here's Josh. He's right in the middle of it. He's a chef, and he's right there on the shore and doesn't know.
Well, here's the deal. Grouper is not a migratory species, and so snapper, grouper live on the reefs down there. They live off the Charleston Bump, mm-hmm. In a very specific local fishery. And so you have examples of fisheries that are micromanaged very well, such as the Charleston grouper, the South Carolina snapper, and some of those. Whereas in other places, it's not doing as well. It can do better in some places.
So if he wants to be a locavore like JJ right off his shores, he may be able to do that. Josh, when patrons come into your restaurant these days, are they asking about the sustainability of what you have on your menu? Do you feel like it better be sustainable or I'm going to get some grief?
There's no doubt about it. The fact is, local sells, and they want to support our fisheries, and they want to support our fishermen 100%.
Well, that's very advanced, and that's
yes.
great. And oftentimes, sustainability is kind of managed in this idea of fear that chefs have because, I don't want to get outed for selling a red list species. But as I was talking about, I really think the compelling narrative of conservation is a story of responsible consumption. It's not what we don't do. It's not what we abstain from or sacrifice, but rather it's what we do, how we do it, and how we restore and participate in this intricate relationship with our natural world and our economies of our local communities.
But there is some don't do. That's what the Red List is about, right? Monterey puts it out. I was out. It's beautiful, the facility mm-hmm. there. I was out at one of our stations, KAZU, that carries On Point, just last summer. And you learn a lot there in a hurry about what they're saying. Don't go there. Do go there. I mean, there are some do-nots here.
Yes, there are very few, just as there are very few kind of absolute do's to sustainable seafood. And as I mm-hmm. keep saying, I think it's our responsibility to really support, to find, support, and subsidize through our consumer dollars the industries that are not doing so well, but the visionary players within it, like the Cape Cod Hook Fishermen's Association here, who are really making the industry as a whole more sustainable, driving mm-hmm. us towards a more replenished stock and a more economical and more profitable fishery.
Setting up weirs in Provincetown. And,
there's a lot
going on in a small, on the smaller level.
You've got clams going on here. Are these local? You're a locavore big time.
I want to tell you about these because I'm really excited about these.
This is marinated clams with minted lemon marinade and pine nuts. All right, take us away.
All right, so these are razor clams.
Beautiful,
and I'm guessing
long,
that most
slim.
Beautiful, tender. I'm guessing most of the people. How is it, Barton? Is that good?
Oh,
yeah?
Nice job.
All right, thank you. I'm guessing that most of the people that are listening don't even know what a razor clam is because razor clams are kind of hard to get. You have to actually hunt them. They're not
dig them on the Washington coast,
right?
Washington State.
So they're in Washington and they're mm-hmm. here, and that's pretty much. I mean, they're
Chesapeake
not
Bay. They're all over the place.
Are
they're
really
widely available?
But,
nearly everywhere,
and they're everywhere, and they're not endangered in any way, and they're really delicious, and they make great chowder and great clam rolls. They're a little hard to get. You have to really put some energy into getting them. You can't just sort of scoop them up like you can an oyster. You have to throw salt on the flats and grab them as they come up.
As a kid, I remember on the Pacific coast in Washington, it was fun because you'd see the little the little detent.
Siphon.
The little sort of detent. What's the word I'm looking at? Dent in the sand. And then dig like crazy at an angle toward the shore.
And you've got to go the right way
or
you cut
toward
your finger
the shore
because they're sharp.
And they'd be delicious. Uh-huh. But I mean, you're huge on oysters and clams, Barton, because they clean up the oceans.
Yeah, so, especially farm-raised clams, mussels, oysters, and farm-raised scallops really represent what I feel is the only black and white issue in sustainable seafood. Oysters, eat them.
Yes.
Eat all you can.
Razor clams, same.
Yes.
Razor clams, well, those are a wild fishery, so that's a little bit different.
If you can get them.
It's in your book, though.
Yes. I recommend that we eat them. They're delicious. They're fun. They're celebratory. They've got this beautiful
Gigi,
that
shell
that
looks
like
a straight
razor.
I mean, they're so beautiful.
I love them.
They're aesthetically gorgeous.
As a child, I used to dig them in Wellfleet. That was like my favorite sport, and I haven't seen them ever commercially except for one time on the West Coast, very briefly in the 90s. And I want to give these guys a little shout out. These came from Island Creek Oysters.
These guys are great.
In Duxbury. And these guys delicious. Are doing amazing work, and they call themselves farmers, not fishermen.
Wow.
And it's an interesting distinction because what they're saying is we're not fishing, we're farming, we're replenishing.
So these are farmed razor
no,
clams?
No, well, they're wild.
Or it's just their
no,
sense
they're
of
wild,
how they do it.
But right. I think it's more of a deep sense that what they're doing is working with their beds. And
On Facebook here, Tim is writing, and he says, my shop window looks out over Stonington Harbor. I guess that's Maine, where more lobster is brought to market than, any other port in Maine. Where's lobster on your list? He asks you, Barton.
Lobster is doing very well. Right now in Massachusetts and south into Long Island, it's facing some issues with white shell disease or shell disease. It's a bacteria that's running rampant. However, and that bacteria just causes the lobsters to be more susceptible to injury.
Is it a reason not to buy or not to
Doesn't
eat?
It just
well,
become
I would
ugly?
Say that Maine lobsters is really just is another one of the great examples of how an incredibly complex community system works together.
Meaning?
Well, you have in Maine not too many industries. I mean, you have tourism, logging, potatoes, and lobsters, and not to take credit away from Maine, but so many people, from school teachers to net builders to iron workers to boat mechanics to the lobstermen themselves, and these incredibly intricate island communities depend upon a resource in order for their own well-being.
So, and so they're managing a strong sense of how to keep on top of it.
There's a very strong community sense of how to integrate.
Yeah, I just have a question about that disease. My understanding is it just makes them ugly. It doesn't actually really affect the flesh. Is that right?
It doesn't affect the meat for our purposes, but it makes the lobsters more susceptible. It softens the shell.
I see.
And,
because I've been offered opportunities to buy less expensive lobster because the lobsterman can't necessarily sell it.
Doesn't look
it doesn't
pretty.
Look good.
But would you eat it, Barton? No hesitation on eating it?
No hesitation on eating it.
Delicious.
Go to Matthews, Virginia, and Angela. Angela, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm very eager to get your guest book. I have two questions. One is, since we really don't know how much antibiotic is given to farm fish, isn't it true that maybe we really should stay away from it? And my next question is, there are certain groups of people who don't eat certain types of fish because they consider them scavenger fish. And then we have the fish with the mercury and so forth and so on. Please tell me what comment on whether or not you have any concern about fish that eat the excretions of other fish and scavenge the bottom for dead fish and so forth. To be healthy is very difficult when you really don't know which way to turn.
And scavenger fish, you mean like maybe religious restrictions on shellfish, that kind of thing, Angela?
Yes, there must be a reason that people don't eat shellfish. When you say that clams clean the water, yes, but aren't we then eating the deleterious material that they've eaten, and we get it in our system? And I'm talking about catfish. There are a lot of people who won't eat catfish because of what catfish actually eat. I'd like your guest, Mr. Seaver, to please comment on that.
We'll definitely do it, but don't rain on that parade too hard. I love catfish and oysters and clams all my life, Angela, but what about it? You hear the question.
I will resurrect your passion
all
for
right.
it.
Yes.
It is probably easier to buy illicit drugs on the street than it is to buy an oyster clam mussel from polluted waters. There are exceptionally strict and stringent controls and methods to ensure that a filter feeder is absolutely 100% safe to eat.
But Angela's going even beyond polluted water. She's saying just on the face of it, they filtered, the scavenged stuff out of the seas, and therefore why would you want to eat it?
Because what they're scavenging out of the seas is they're actually filtering out of the seas. And so the primary production of the ocean is a photosynthetic phytoplankton and then zooplankton, these microscopic animals that live all throughout the water column that really take contemporary energy from the sun and turn it into the vast biomass of the ocean. Now, oysters, clams, and mussels filter that through through balenes, and that's the whale, but filter it through their bodies, thus removing those nutrients and that incredibly
that rich soup there.
Well, that rich soup, and in some cases like the Chesapeake Bay, where you have an exceptional amount of farm runoff, so you actually have over nutrification. Just as fertilizer helps plants grow on land, it helps plants grow in the ocean. And so with a depleted stock of oysters and with an augmented stock of the phytoplankton, mm-hmm. you actually have water clarity issues. Now, if we were to help restore those oyster populations and the menhaden, which is a fish that filters the top column of the water,
right.
we would actually solve a lot of the problems facing the Chesapeake Bay and many of our polluted, our so-called over-nutrified waterways.
So if we eat them, make a market for them, we may encourage more of them to be in the seas, in this case, and by that, clean the seas.
In this case, yes, because 98% of the oysters, clams, and mussels that we eat in this country come from farmed sources. And so every time we eat a farmed oyster, we're incentivizing a farmer to plant two more. Mm-hmm. So it's environmentalism on the half shell. You can have
Go
a six-pack of beer and a bottle of Tabasco and some lemons and, you know.
Angela, hey. There's a line of reasoning you can take right to the oyster bar, if you will. Bill in Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, thanks for calling. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Did I hear somebody there say that mackerel was not that popular with the public?
I don't know about that. I got some beautiful mackerel right in front of me right now and grew up eating it very happily. JJ, what do you say?
Well, I thought this was a really... an interesting experience. I called six different fish dealers looking
for
mackerel. Looking
not
for
canned
fresh,
in the tins, which you
not
can find
canned,
pretty easy.
Not pickled, fresh mackerel.
Yeah.
Nobody could get it for me. I only wanted a pound of it.
Yeah.
I had to buy, 100 pounds, and I didn't want 100 pounds.
Right.
Nobody could get it. I called all different kinds of levels of markets looking for it. And ultimately, we did find it. We found it whole and not gutted, which I thought was interesting, which makes me think it probably was pretty fresh, one of the big Asian market, Super 88,
just around the corner.
Yep. And they carry it all the time, apparently. But when I tried to go to the more boutique-y, kind of more like the places where you would go to get the sushi-grade mm-hmm. tuna or the swordfish, they didn't even know where to start.
Let me ask our caller. Bill, what do you say about mackerel, Bill?
I think mackerel is unbelievably delicious. You take mackerel, and it, by the way, it has to be fresh. You can't catch it, freeze it for a couple of weeks in the freezer, take it out, and expect it to taste as good as it would, let's say, within a couple of days of catching it.
Yeah.
But you take that... You maybe wrap it in a little bit of aluminum foil with a little bit of butter, maybe some garlic salt, put it on the grill, and then you serve it, put some lemon all over it. Oh, my God, is that delicious.
Bill, we hear you, and I want you to feel some envy right now. Our time is growing short, but we've got here from Barton's book, Poached Mackerel Roll. That's like lobster roll, but mackerel roll. With spiced mayonnaise, and listen, I'm salivating so much I can hardly... Yeah, Barton.
Well, Bill, I'd like to, A, congratulate you on your exceptional palate. You're right, mackerel is good. One of the problems that we run into, because we have sort of moved into just these commodity fisheries, we don't walk into a store asking the fishmonger, hey, what do you got that's best? What's freshest? What's seasonal? What's most beautiful? We walk in with a preordained recipe from a book or from a downloaded off the internet.
Give me this.
It says, give me this. And we're forcing nature to provide for us rather than, and the best way to buy good fish is to walk in and introduce yourself to the fishmonger.
Absolutely.
Because if he knows your name, then they're not going to sell you bad fish.
Right.
Yep.
And then to say, what's best.
You say, good morning, Carl. What'd you get this morning?
and then go with that. One more call. Jody in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Jody, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say I grew up a shrimper. My dad and his dad were both, were all shrimpers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I grew up, we ate what is now called bycatch, which back then we just called trash.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically the stuff we couldn't sell, anything we couldn't sell. So I want to encourage people not to just go for the biggest and the cleanest and the freshest and all that. There's lots of good seafood out there that isn't maybe the highest priced, but it's mm-hmm. wonderful to eat. And I want to say also that you can't expect commercial fishermen to look too far down the road. They've got boat payments to make. They've got families to feed.
Yeah,
and legislation is the only thing that's going to keep the seas, plentiful.
Jody,
and,
you've got Barton
Seabee. I didn't support that as a fisherman.
Yeah.
But now that I'm out of fishing, I've got to say that I have to agree with that.
You've got Barton Seaver nodding along and J.J. Gonson, too, on all fronts. What do you say, Barton? Just
well,
a minute here.
Jody, when you were fishing shrimp, wouldn't you have loved it if some chef in the local area would have said, oh, you got bycatch? Sure, I'll pay you $3 a pound for it.
Mm.
You know, hey, we've already killed that fish. We should use it. We should also retrofit our technology so that we're catching less of it, because it's just needless waste. But that is one of the great opportunities that we have. And if consumers were willing to diversify their palates, then we could actually participate in the age-old act of fishing and not catching.
Boy,
and beautiful, beautifully put. I'm just enjoying this so much. And by way of diversifying your palate, also looking to what is, as the caller earlier said, what is coming right off your shores. We have wonderful things unique to this area, like bluefish. And it's great. It's only here. It's plentiful when it's in season, and or not
so
only
tasty.
Here.
Many
it's
shores.
So tasty.
Many shores, and each with their
Many
own
shores.
Special thing. We've got
yeah.
this mackerel right here, and it's just beautiful. I mean, it looks
it's
like
really
a
good.
Lobster roll, but it's mackerel instead. A deeper color, a deeper flavor. Lemon and thyme and salt, mace and celery, and
mace.
A diced shallot in here. Absolutely delicious. We're going to enjoy this right off the air. Bon appetit. Gigi Gonson, thank you so much.
Oh, thank
this is
you.
A beautiful, beautiful display.
Thank you, Tom Amberton.
Barton Siever, it's a beautiful display of food and thinking in your new cookbook, Cod for Cod and Country, Simple, Delicious, Sustainable Cooking. Keep up the good work. Thanks so much for being with us, Barton.
Oh, it's a real honor. Thank you.
What a happy day. We'll go with Fats Waller and a table full of anchovy and clam and mackerel and joy. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I want the seafood, mama.
I want the seafood, mama.
I want some seafood, mama.
I want the seafood, mama.
Fish, 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 fish,